Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. As we roll on, we've already gone from basketball to hockey. Now we're going to go to football. We're going to have a lot of fun in this segment, and this is one I've been looking forward to all week. And that is Greg Cosell from NFL Films. And I'd like to remind everyone, tomorrow we're also going to talk about the Super Bowl. We're going to have Tony Knopp on tomorrow talking about Super Bowl tickets. Kevin brought up the topic of StubHub tickets, availability, how do you get them, so forth. We're going to have Tony Knopp on from Los Angeles tomorrow. We've had Tony on before talking about NHL distribution and tickets. We've done that before. And we've had Tony on twice. Great guest. Well, yeah, he deals with football as well. And we'll talk to Tony about that. Coming up on Friday, we're going to also have Jeff Byers to talk about Penn State Iowa wrestling. We're going to have him on to talk about Penn State Iowa wrestling from Iowa City as we get you ready for number one against number three, Penn State against Iowa, the current best wrestling program in America against what used to be the best wrestling program in America. Final half hour, we're going to have Chuck Greenberg, State College Spikes, on. Talk with him, and we're going to talk to someone from Penn State Track and Field who broke the four-minute mile indoors. All right, that's fun. We'll talk about that in the final half hour as well. But now we get to a point, and it's someone I just have immense respect for. He's done this for a long time. Greg Cosell, working at NFL Films, breaking down film, breaking down DVD, breaking down tape. And at the same time, now a valuable asset with the NFL Network. We bring in Greg Cosell. Greg, welcome back to the show. It is great to have you with us.
Steve, my pleasure.
I want to talk, obviously, one of the focal points this week will be Ray Lewis. You've watched tape. What is the difference? Ray Lewis probably 7-8 years ago was making a lot of tackles in that six-yard area, 3 yards on his side, 3 yards on the other side. When you watch the tape now, where's he making his tackles?
You know, I think the best way to answer that, Steve, is that Ray's still a very good run defender in the box and is between the tackles. I think that's what he does now. I don't think that he moves particularly well outside of the box area, and I think he's a liability in coverage. Obviously, he's had big tackle totals, but a lot of those tackles do come 7, 8, 9 yards down the field, and I've never been a big believer in tackles. It's like when I start watching college tape and I read that so-and-so had, 140 tackles. I really don't know what that means until I watch the tape, because it's one of those stats that by itself, there's no context. It has no meaning.
Exactly. In other words, if I see a guy, for example, knock down 20 points in a basketball game, 15 or a garbage time, it's irrelevant. I mean, so what?
Exactly.
You padded stats.
That's why I'm always a tape watcher. And, it's funny. It's like when because I do all my college work, and I'm starting to do a little of that now before I go to New Orleans tomorrow. But as soon as I see guys on television recite statistics on, let's say, linemen or linebackers in college, I know that they're not watching games or tape because that's easy to do. My daughter could recite call statistics. It doesn't tell you anything.
Right, exactly. And I always make sure I'll get a game tape before I do a football game because I'm looking for certain things. And I don't recite. I want an eyeball test to give me a feel as to how he plays the game.
Absolutely. You have to see where those tackles are. And that's why with Ray, as I said, I still think he's a solid player when it comes to defending the run in the box area between the tackles. Still very good. Great play recognition, great reaction. He's very good at that. But I think when you get outside that area, he's certainly not what he was. And he's, in fact, a liability in pass coverage at this point in his career.
Suggs was outstanding last year in the Thanksgiving night game against San Francisco.
Yes.
Without question. He's had to come back from an injury. As the weeks have gone along, how well has he played? Has he been able to get more push, better push off the edge compared to when the first couple games he came back?
I'm sure he would disagree with me on this, but I don't think he's quite the same player yet, and who knows whether he will ever be, given his age and the number of the tread on his tires, as it were. But I don't think he's quite the pass rusher he was. Now, again, he's had 2 weeks here. You just have to do it for one more game. I'm sure that the Ravens would like to be in a situation where they feel that Suggs on one side and Kruger on the other side can at least push the pocket and close down the pocket a little bit for Kaepernick. But I don't think Suggs has shown over the last month or so that he's truly the pass rusher he was.
How strong has Baltimore been in its sub package?
I think they're very good in their sub-package for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think Graham has been really good in the slot. And we all thought there'd be a major drop-off because Ladarius Webb was a great slot corner, and obviously he got hurt for the season. But I think Graham has been really, really good in the slot. The other thing is in their sub-package is Ellerbe becomes a little more of a downhill player, a little more of a blitzer, and I think that's the strength of his game. I think Danelle Ellerbe is at his best playing downhill and blitzing, and you certainly can do that more in the sub packages.
Jim Caldwell takes over, old friend of mine, who's now running the offense. They've been able to put together, I think, five straight games of better than 350 yards, which Baltimore's never done before. When you look at the tape, Cam Cameron's a very good offensive coordinator, but are you seeing subtle differences in what Baltimore is doing now compared to earlier in the year with Cam Cameron?
I would say yes, and I'd say probably the biggest difference has been less base personnel with fullback Vontae Leach and more three wide receiver personnel, which I think ultimately plays better to one, Flacco, and your quarterback's always your most important player on offense, and two, I think it plays better to Anquan Boldin. He's better in the slot than he is outside, and I think it also helps Dennis Pitta. So I think it really gives them some options and some variables that they don't have when they're in their base personnel.
In the trenches, Greg, what has the move of Brian McKinney to Michael Orr to right tackle meant for the run game and protection for Flacco?
I think it's been real positive because I didn't call him necessarily a mobile quarterback, so that's an impressive statistic. He's really not been under that much consistent pressure. Now, some of that is Flacco as well, getting rid of the ball at the right time. And they're a deep drop pass scheme, so the pressure is on the O-line to pass protect. So I think it's been a significant improvement in where they were prior.
One of the things I look at when I look at tape of a quarterback, I want to see how well he sees the field, because obviously you have people consumed with hate trying to get to you. And when you look at Joe Flacco, how well is Joe Flacco seeing the field with his progressions right now?
I think he's doing a pretty good job, and I think a lot of people in the league would say that one of the things he always needed to work on was the fact that he was not a great progression reader. They face a lot of man coverage because their receivers don't necessarily separate real well versus man, and it's obviously easier to read man coverage than it is zone. So I think for the most part, Flacco's improved in that area, and it's subtle things too. I mean, say taking two steps to one side, and then you know you can make a certain throw. I think he's pretty good at that. And because he has such a big arm, he gets the ball there in a hurry.
I know Jack Ham and I, in broadcasting Penn State's games, Navarro Bowman would make a really nice transition to the NFL because, like Sean Lee, he could play the pass.
Right.
When you look at the three linebackers for the Niners, do they have more flexibility with their defense because they don't have to package as often as some teams?
Well, the Niners are a nickel defense. They rarely play dime, and they essentially only play 12 guys. They take out the nose tackle, Sopo Aga, and they bring in Chris Culliver. So, and they play a lot of man coverage at a nickel, Steve. So what they do is Willis covers the tight end, and Bowman almost always covers the back. And I think that his matchup with Ray Rice is going to be a very, very intriguing one. I thought that Bowman actually got burned in the championship game, and Matt Ryan made the absolute wrong throw. It would have been a touchdown to Jacquizz Rodgers, and it was on a wheel route. And I think you're going to see the Ravens. They have the wheel route in their playbook. I think you're going to see them test that. I think you'll see Rice on a wheel route, and they'll see how Bowman covers. That to me, is a really intriguing element to this game.
And, you know, and what's odd about that is you and I both know the wheel route is one of the base routes for a running back that works so often for many teams.
Yep. And normally what a team does with it is they offset the back to the single receiver side, right, and they have that single wideout almost, you know, set kind of a legal pick or rub, and it's very hard for that linebacker to work through that traffic, and therefore he's behind the play right from the start.
My opinion only, but I think one of the things that's been lost in the ascension of Colin Kaepernick was that at the same time that happened, LaMichael James started getting a little more involved. Let's face it, we're going to run some read option. He's a perfect running back to have in it. When you've looked at the tape, what has he meant to what the 49ers do in their various packages?
Well, I think you hit it on the head. I don't think it's really more complicated than that, because he obviously has experience in it from Oregon. And with Kaepernick, it's pistol, it's read option. They do a good amount of that. It's game specific, but obviously it's a significant part of what they do. And James is a different back than Frank Gore. He gets on the perimeter. I mean, I loved the touchdown run, the 15-yarder by James, the first touchdown against Atlanta. It was a play I've seen many, many times in college. It was sort of a combination read option and power for the quarterback. It was really two plays in one, dependent on what the outside defenders do for the defense. And Kaepernick obviously saw them take that one step inside, and he gave it to James. And with that kind of speed and burst, there was no one out there, and they had it well blocked.
You only take what defenses give you. Vernon Davis had been quiet because, look, he's a threat. They take him away. What didn't Atlanta do that allowed Davis to then suddenly become a part of what Colin Kaepernick wanted to do? What were they trying to take away that allowed him to then be available?
Well, it's a great question. I don't know if it's a matter of what they were trying to take away. My guess is it was Greg Roman and Jim Harbaugh looking at that defense and saying, you know what, their linebackers are not very good in coverage, particularly in zone. And if they do play man and they put Thomas Dekou on him, which they did, he's not a great man-to-man coverage defender for a safety. So I think they looked at the Atlanta defense and said, Vernon Davis is a big factor against both zone and man, and we can exploit that defense by doing that.
Colin Kaepernick, obviously, everyone's talking about him and what he brings to the table. You and I discussed a couple of weeks ago what a tight ball he throws. I'll ask you the question about him. He's relatively young in his career. How well does he do with progressions?
Not real well. And I think the 49ers are outstanding with all their backfield action, with the multiplicity of their personnel and formations, at setting him up so that that primary read is available more often than not, because he's not yet ready to go through progressions. But they've been able to disguise and camouflage it because they're so, so good with those other things.
I want to ask you about the offensive line for the 49ers. Seems like a lot of people don't really talk too much about them. Your thoughts on what they've been able to accomplish up front in front of him?
Oh, well, they're very good. It's a really good group, Steve. You know, Staley's an excellent left tackle. Anthony Davis from Rutgers still occasionally has some technique issues, but he's a really good athlete. You know, I think that their guards, I mean, Yapati, when he came out, I think it was Idaho or Idaho State, if memory serves me correctly.
Yes.
He's a really good athlete. I mean, there were a lot of people who thought he could eventually play tackle in the NFL. So you've got a great athlete playing left guard. And Goodwin is just a really, really solid center. And then you got Boone, who was a tackle, if memory serves me correctly, at Ohio State. You'd remember that.
Yes.
I think he was a tackle, was he not?
He was a tackle. He was a right tackle at Ohio State.
Yeah, and he's made a real nice transition to right guard. So, I mean, I think their O-line as individuals is very good, and I think cohesively, I believe they've started every game this year, and I believe other than Boone last year, they started every game together. So this is a very cohesive unit as a group, and they're very good individually.
And you and I know that word cohesion means everything to those five guys and the tight end up front. Frank Gore has some mileage on him, but to his credit has been able to pound it out and pound it out and pound it out. When you look at the tape of him, Greg, what kind of running back is the Frank Gore we're seeing now playing in his first Super Bowl to the one who was called upon to be the guy for so many years?
You know, Steve, I love Frank Gore, and I don't think there's a huge difference. He's deceptively quick and explosive in a short area. You don't think of him as a long speed guy, you know, that runs away from defenses, but that's down the list of what's important to be a really good NFL back. He's powerful. He runs through tackles. He's got really good lateral agility and movement. And I think lateral agility for a back in the NFL is far more important than straight line top end speed. I just think he has almost everything you want in a back, as I said, with the exception of, you know, top end long speed, but that's way down the list.
You notice, I think I've only asked one Kaepernick a question along the way. He's going to be obviously the focal point of everything that goes on down in New Orleans. But there's so many other components to this. When you listen to the focus of a week like this, do you scratch your head sometimes saying there's a lot of other stories that are being missed?
Well, you know, it's funny you ask me that question because, you know, believe me, I don't live, you know, under a rock, so I know everything that's being talked about. I talk to a lot of people. I just love the X's and O's part of it, Steve, as you know. I mean, you know, I don't spend a lot of time with the Harbaughs and that kind of, or Ray Lewis playing in his last game. You know, those are great stories, and I understand and appreciate the fact that people want to talk about it. Obviously, that's not where I'm focused when I do my work, and that's not what I truly enjoy about football.
Well, see, that's why I have you on the show. We're on the same page. That's why when I ask you about Ray Lewis, I want to know where he's making tackles now as opposed to...
Look, I've been around Ray Lewis, and I got to tell you, I don't think I've ever been around anyone who's so motivational and inspirational, because I've been around him at charity events, and I actually introduced him at a charity event a few years ago, and it was, I mean, the guy is just, he's unbelievable in person. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to be around him, but in person, it's just, the energy just, it emanates from his body. But, you know, again, I just tell you what I see on film, and that's what I really enjoy about the game.
One final question, then I'll let you go. Based on watching the tapes, how motivated are you to watch a matchup like this? Because you're talking about two teams that have not played against one another in 15 months.
You know, I think it's a really intriguing game. My sense is, Steve, it's going to be not as high-scoring as some might think. I know I've seen some people think it's going to be a shootout. Look, these games have so many variables. I'm never surprised by anything. But my initial sense would be that we're looking at a 23-20 kind of game. I don't think we're looking at a 35-30 kind of game, you know, barring turnovers and returns and those kinds of things. That's just my sense of the game. I think that... you're dealing with defenses. I don't think the Ravens defense quite gets enough credit, and we know San Francisco's defense is very, very good. But I think this game will be a little more tightly contested and hard fought than many might think.
Absolute pleasure, as always. We again appreciate it so much, Greg. Safe trip down to New Orleans. Enjoy it.
Thanks, Steve. Anytime, my pleasure.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, NFL Network. Joining us to break down the Super Bowl. I know I kid Kevin all the time, it's not the kind of segment that, you know, he wants to have. He wants to talk about the NFL experience. And I'm just kidding, because Kevin is a football junkie. And Kevin absolutely ate up that segment. I mean, he was probably taking notes so he can then watch the game on Sunday. But again, that's what Greg Cosell can do. You know, it's only spent about 20 minutes with him there. I mean, 20 valuable minutes before he gets rolling. And we tried to get to as much as possible. We talked about the two offensive lines, about the two quarterbacks. I didn't really get too much into Ray Rice. The last time we had him on the show, we did talk a lot about Ray Rice. Last time we had him on the show, I talked a lot with him about Ed Reed, so I didn't get into Ed Reed this time. but we tried to hit as much as possible. The fact that the Niners are only a 12-man defensive football team. They only play nickel. They don't take that. But again, that's because Willis and Bowman are both so good in coverage. That's why when Jack Ham and I talk about every down linebackers, their value grows exponentially, especially at the next level, because teams would prefer in disguising their defenses to not want to change personnel and give away what they're doing. So if you have somebody who's a two-way linebacker who can make plays like Bowman and Willis can, and Bowman might be playing a little bit better than Willis right now, it makes a huge difference to, like, Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator of the 49ers. They can disguise more because of it. All right, final half hour coming up, including Chuck Kreemberg, the managing general partner of the State College Spikes, talks of minor league baseball, and believe it or not, a little track and field. Someone broke a four-minute mile at Penn State last weekend. We'll talk to that freshman as well. We'll come up with the news next as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While your favorite team is driving down the field, you're driving all around looking for a new car, which is driving you crazy. Well, Sunbury Motors makes buying a new car easy with a huge inventory and lots of choices. Our North 4th Street Auto Plaza is stocked full of Ford, Lincoln, and Hyundais. We sell over a couple hundred cars a month. Why? Service and price. With our lowest price promise, if you can find a better price and another dealer on the used car you want, we'll beat it. That's a promise. Shop the largest Ford dealership online 24/7 at sunburymotors.com. Let's stop in and test drive Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury and our Kia dealership at Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And be ready to tackle the largest inventory and our lowest price promise, selling more cars and satisfying more customers since 1915. Sunbury Motors. SunburyMotors.com. The winning team.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Final half hour of the show. I'm in the beautiful Sunbury Motors Studio. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And, of course, we have the Hilscher's General Store Hotline, which we've been calling out extensively today at 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. Powered by Hilscher's General Store. Go to www.hilscherstore.com. Check out the bakery. Check out the deli. Check out the dining. Check out the clothing. Check out the food section. A lot to check out at Hilscher's General Store, 7 miles south of Sealands Grove. We've been calling out on the Hilscher's General Store hotline today. If you missed any of it, Greg Cosell from NFL Films, NFL Network, breaking down the Super Bowl. Gordon Brunskill, Center Daily Times, breaking down Penn State ice hockey and their great resurgence this year. And also Patrick Chambers, we had in the opening half hour of the show talking about Penn State basketball. Coming up on Friday, by the way, Jeff Byers on Penn State wrestling. Tomorrow, Tony Knopp on Super Bowl tickets. So we have a lot going on in the show. Now, I told you it's a football, basketball, baseball, hockey day. The baseball part about to occur. We bring in Chuck Kreemberg, the managing general partner, owner of the State College Spikes, also still affiliated with the Texas Rangers in ownership. Chuck, welcome. It's great to have you back on the show.
Good to be with you, Steve.
I trust it's been a productive day here at Penn State for you.
Oh, absolutely. Made it through the fog on the way up and got some meetings all day and some great planning sessions with the staff, and now I've got a fun opportunity this afternoon to meet with several different groups of students for some Q&A and talk about some of the interesting things going on in the sports industry, so I'm looking forward to it.
How fun is it for you on a January 29th to be talking baseball?
Well, like you, I end up talking baseball almost every day of the year, but you know, on a day like today with the sun just broke out and being over at Medler Field, it definitely, you know, whets the appetite, especially knowing that pitchers and catchers report in just a couple of weeks, and that's always exciting. So we've almost made it through. It's almost spring.
You've been at all levels of sports, so you know that for a family of four on the major league level or an NFL or an NHL level, they can pick out a game here or there, and they can go to a game here and there, but in terms of being fully invested every single day going to the ballpark, it's difficult. Minor league baseball is different. Is that part of the charm for you, the fact that it is an every night family affordable deal?
No doubt. You know, sometimes it's easy to miss how prices for other types of experiences have risen so dramatically. I mean, yesterday, I won't say where, but I just went to a little sandwich shop and I got a sandwich and a couple bottles of water and a cup of soup, and it was $18. And I was thinking, geez, you know, when you look at how affordable minor league baseball is, I mean, you can still take a family of four, get a hot dog, a soda, go to the game, park, get a nice ticket, and spend about $40 for a total of four people. And that's incredible. And, you know, it's something that we're very proud of, that it's not just that we have a fun, wholesome environment, but it's a great value. And there just aren't a lot of places where a family of four can have a great night for, you know, $40 or $45. And the fact that we can do that in an environment that has so many other enjoyable things going on, and where, by the way, you also get to see some really talented young players who are on their way up and hoping to achieve their dreams, that's a pretty unbeatable combination.
You have an interesting situation where you have a team here in State College. You've also had the Myrtle Beach team in South Carolina. Two different leagues, two different maybe environments. Can you compare and contrast the two franchises for us?
Well, it's been interesting. That's one of the, you know, one of the fun things about being an operator is you're in different environments and different communities, and you have different experiences. So Altoona, State College, Myrtle Beach, they've all been extremely enjoyable, and they're all different. You know, State College, there certainly are a lot of people who come to visit during the summer, particularly the kids who come up for the sports camps. It's a fairly stable community, and, of course, we only have 38 home games, so we're trying to make sure we put on a great show all 38 times, but that it's fresh and new because we know so many of our fans come to multiple games. Myrtle Beach, it's a wonderful local community, but there's also 15 million tourists a year, the lion's share of whom are there during the baseball season. So we have an unusually high percentage of our fans in Myrtle Beach who are probably only going to come to one game a year because they're in town for, you know, 5 days or a week, and then they're going back home. So there it's a little bit different, you know, different environment, and we don't have the challenge of keeping it fresh night after night. But we do have the challenge of trying to make sure that we connect with tourists as they come to town. So, again, with each franchise come unique opportunities and unique challenges, and that's part of the fun of the business.
I want two parts of that answer. You mentioned in part of that stability, the stability of your front office here. I mean, there's been a change here or there along the line, but how much has that meant to the success of the franchise?
Oh, it's been a great deal. We've had great leadership from before day one. In fact, Jason Dombach, our vice president, general manager, and I were reminiscing about when we opened up our office on Calder Way back in 2005, more than 6 months before we'd even opened Medler Field at Lebrano Park. And, you know, Rick Janik did a great job with our leadership when we first launched the franchise. And Jason has picked it up from there. Apparently, there's a motorcycle race going on College Avenue. But you know, we've had great stability, not just from Rick and Jason, but also the rest of the front office. And they've built relationships individually. They've become big parts of the community. And it's made me proud to be associated with everybody.
That may have been Dombach on the motorcycle. No, I'm just kidding. After the pit loss last night to Louisville, he probably wants to just lay low. The next part of that, you mentioned the community part of it, that you're very proud of it. The fact that there has been a conscious outreach to so many charities, is that a staple in minor league baseball, or is that something that really has been, that has really caught on base within your organizations?
Well, I think it's a value that you'll find throughout the vast majority of minor league baseball teams. Minor league baseball franchises, so many of them do a wonderful job of connecting with their communities, doing good works in good times and tough times. And it's certainly something that I felt strongly about when we first bought Altoona back in 2002, and it's something that we've continued to, you know, invest in, both in terms of dollars, but most importantly, just, you know, sweat and effort, no matter where we've been all along. And it's something that we're really proud of. And whether it's the individual activities and commitments that our front office makes or the things that we do to try to help connect the ballpark to so many great causes throughout the community, or just to set a good example and, again, be a place for fun, wholesome entertainment, it's something that Our organization takes very seriously. We have a lot of fun with it, but it's also very meaningful to us, and it's a quality that we're happy to share with so many of our colleagues throughout minor league baseball.
You have always valued your partnership and your relationship with the Pittsburgh Pirates, and you continue to do so. You continue to value that friendship with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Business-wise, at this moment in time, it's going to be the St. Louis Cardinals. What makes the St. Louis Cardinals attractive to the State College Spikes?
Well, first of all, they're great people. We were fortunate enough during our inaugural season here in 2006 to have a wonderful experience with them. When we moved over to the Pirates in 2007, it was not because of anything adverse with the Cardinals. We just felt that given the geography and the location and the connection to Pittsburgh, that it was something we wanted to give a try. And we put it forth our very best effort with the Pirates for six seasons. But, you know, when it came time and it looked like maybe it was in everyone's best interest to look in another direction, we were very, very excited to get the Cardinals back, and they were excited to be back with us. They've done an outstanding job of maintaining a very strong relationship with us during those intervening 6 years, not because they had an agenda, just because we all liked each other, and it was fun to continue to develop that friendship. And when you look at the way they conduct themselves, the strength of their minor league system, the qualities that they exude professionally and personally, it's a real honor to be their affiliate. Yesterday, Baseball America released their rankings of all of the farm systems in minor league baseball, and the Cardinals are ranked number one. And, you know, there really is something to that Cardinal way. The Cardinals organization under Branch Rickey back in the 40s invented the player development system, and once again, they're at the top of their field. So, you know, they're great people. They're a great organization from top to bottom. We thoroughly enjoyed our experience with the Pirates, and you never know what the future might hold, but we are very, very excited to be back with the Cardinals this year. I think the community is excited about it, too, based on how tickets have been selling and the overall vibe that we've been picking up. And, you know, it's part of the adventure of minor league baseball and of life in general is that relationships or affiliations may come and go, but relationships hopefully always continue to build. And we're going to maintain those relationships with the Pirates now that we're affiliated with the Cardinals, just as the converse was true over the preceding 6 years.
The next part of it is this is also the eighth season of the franchise. Regardless of affiliation, is it safe to now think of this as State College's baseball team, regardless of affiliation?
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it. We've always viewed that as being true from day one. I mean, you know, we say State College. I mean, State College and Center County and the surrounding community has really taken us into everyone's collective arms as their own, and we've tried to reciprocate on our end. So it's such a strong relationship on so many different levels all throughout the community, and it's something that we're very appreciative of and thankful for, because it doesn't happen everywhere, but it's just been outstanding in every way here, and we are just looking forward to even bigger and better as we move forward.
You have a dream when you put something together. So here's, you mentioned opening up on Calder Way in 2005 and then moving from there to a groundbreaking, to a ballpark, to an affiliation, to a first season, to a first pitch, to then into a second season and so forth. How has the dream of what 2005 was worked out to the reality of where we are in 2013?
Exceptionally well. You know, I look back, I mean, you learn things every day, hopefully, and you try to apply those lessons with each homestand and each month and each year and each season. But overall, I couldn't have been more pleased with how things have gone. You know, again, to us, it's not about wins and losses, though obviously we certainly would love to see a competitive team, and we've enjoyed the times that we have been competitive. But, you know, more than anything, it's about the contributions that we're in a position to try to make to the community, the memories that are made, the experiences that are shared. And that was at the core of our vision for the State College Spikes, and I think we've realized that. Now, having said that, we're always hungry to try to get better, and this has been a really dynamic off season with a lot of planning and ideas being thrown about how we can do that, and all, of course, that's under Jason's tremendous leadership. So as pleased as we are with how things have gone in the first seven seasons, we are incredibly excited about what's to come this season. And that's something that motivates everybody every day. And, you know, as I said, on a nice day like today where the sun's breaking out, and I can see a little bit of green out there. It just makes you hungry for opening day.
Well, you know, Mutch, I enjoy the ballpark on a nightly basis, but I cherish the friendship with you even more. Chuck, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Steve. Anytime. Great to be with you.
Chuck Greenberg, Managing General Partner, State College Spikes. And we're going to transition now over to track and field. This is a great story. Brandon Kidder is with the Penn State track and field team. And Brandon ran a sub-4-minute mile. I mean, that's incredible. A sub-4-minute mile indoors. Indoors. He's now a part of that exclusive club. Just want to spend just a couple minutes with him with the great accomplishment he had. Brandon, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you.
Brandon, when did you start to get a feel as you made your way around the track that you had something cooking?
I mean, in terms of the time, I didn't really think about it until I was going into the last lap. I was just trying to race through the first seven, and then I saw the clock going into eighth and thought I might have a shot at it.
At the Adidas Grand Prix in New York last year, ran a 4:03.12. So you've been in the neighborhood before. So how did you slice the 3 minutes off?
Three seconds.
I meant obviously. Sorry.
Yeah. Just another year of training, I guess, and training with some elite guys.
The way the track is set up, this happened at Ashenfelter, I believe, right?
Yeah.
How much does that track help you turn in a time based on its construction and the little bit of spring you get off that thing?
I mean, it's hard to compare because I never ran it last year, so I don't know what's fitness and what's the track, but it definitely feels nice to run on there.
You won the 800 and also the 1600 Ohio Indoor State Champion. Along the way, when did you decide that, you know what, I like to, you know, I enjoy running, and why middle distance?
I guess I decided that I enjoyed running in junior high, and I just kind of fell into middle distance. I experimented a little bit in junior high, and then that's kind of what I was best at.
For you, why Penn State? You're from Ohio. Why Penn State?
Just mostly the atmosphere that, I don't know, just the chemistry with the team. On my visit here, I really enjoyed it and wanted to come back.
You mentioned the atmosphere. As you were going around the track, what kind of feel did the crowd give you, and what kind of feel did your teammates give you, and how much did it push you?
It was pretty awesome. Most of the race, I don't hear anything going on outside, and don't even really notice the crowd. But going into the last lap, I don't know. I kind of feel the crowd kind of getting louder, and it was awesome.
What kind of kick did you have at the end?
Okay, I guess. It was from 400 out. I kind of went so. I faded a little bit in the last 100, I'd say, but it was all right.
Wait, all right? Yeah. What ran through your mind when you saw the first digit up there being a 3?
That's what I was looking for. As soon as I crossed the line, I was looking up at the clock, and the unofficial time was 3:59. So I was just hoping, just holding my breath, waiting for the official.
And then when the moment came, you knew it was official. How did that feel to be in the sub-4-minute group?
It was an awesome feeling. It's been my goal for so long, so I don't know what to think, I guess.
Well, I think it's an incredible accomplishment. For you in this, in your training here at Penn State, and this is just the beginning for you, what has impressed you about the training that you get here at Penn State that now has allowed you to achieve a goal, but obviously this is only the beginning as a freshman?
Yeah. I guess just the completeness of it. It's we kind of go over everything. It's not just the running. It's all the little details as well and just consistency of every day.
Have you thought, now you're only obviously into a spring semester, have you started to think about a major here?
Yeah, I'll probably go with the kinesiology fitness studies option.
Okay, yeah, there's three different options to it. So you wanted to go with the fitness option down the road. Now, this is idealistically, but we can have a little fun with this. I mean, idealistically, what would you like to do with it down the road?
Ideally, I'd like to coach. So.
You'd like to coach, would you? I think that's terrific. Have you ever done anything where you were, you know, somebody said, hey, why don't you coach some of the younger athletes? You ever had that opportunity in your career?
Not necessarily coach, but I kind of helped out with my high school team this past summer once I'd graduated, and I helped my high school coach and went to a cross-country camp with them.
Brandon, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Sub-4-minute mile. I mean, Brandon Kidder's just a freshman, so just the beginning for him. Just thought it was a great accomplishment and something that I wanted to at least touch on before the show was over with. Had a lot of fun today. Talking with Greg Cosell of NFL Films. All this will be online. So go online and check out the website. And you will hear the Greg Cosell interview, the Patrick Chambers interview, the Gordon Brunskill interview, the Chuck Greenberg interview, the Brandon Kidder interview, all from today's show. Tomorrow will be from Iowa City. And for wrestling fans, the big matchup at 9 o'clock on Friday night, Penn State and Iowa. And yes, we will have Jeff Byers on from Iowa City to preview the big dual meet between number one and number three as Penn State takes on Iowa. That will be on Friday. Tony Knopp is on tomorrow's show talking about Super Bowl tickets. So we have a lot going on tomorrow from Iowa City as Penn State gets ready to play basketball at Iowa at 8. It'll be a 7:30 airtime tomorrow night. Kevin Herr, I'm Steve Jones. Thanks to all of our guests. News coming up at the top of the hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.